As we all predicted, the first home runs of the major league season, Tommy Edman and Kike Hernandez. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Wednesday, March 19th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby, back in the saddle after a day of craziness yesterday morning. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. Did a great job yesterday running a solo show. Thank you for that, Troy. I want to get to the Braves bringing back, bringing back both a Kimbrel and a McCann. Not the same one, but we got to talk about this Tokyo series because one, yes, sucks that it's so early in the morning, but we saw a lot of really interesting things out of the Los Angeles Dodgers. So you want to start with Roki?
Yeah.
Roki Sasaki gets the start today and there's good in there, right? Three strikeouts. He averaged 99 miles an hour with his fastball in the first inning. But there's also some bad. He walked five guys in his three innings. Finished with one hit, one run on that one hit. If I remember right, it was a Dansby Swanson double down the line that Matt Shaw scored on from first base. But, five walks, three strikeouts. Is Roki Sasaki ready for the majors? Do you think this is just like Yamamoto last year or that first outing being over in Asia, his first debut in MLB just kind of was a little overamped? Or is this something where he's probably only in the majors right now because they're in Japan and he's Roki Sasaki?
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to. I think they're going to keep him on the major league roster as far as the Dodgers plan moving forward. But however, I also don't think that he is ready for the majors. And, you know, we've talked about it since they signed him and even before they signed him, that he should be looked at more as a prospect than a major league ready product because he's very young. I think he's 23 and, you know, he hasn't faced major league hitting until this year. And it's a different ball than in Japan. It's, they have the different, all kinds of stuff is different than in Japan. And so it's different workload. And I just don't think he's ready for that major league level. And we kind of saw those struggles and it could be the different ball that caused, you know, the walks today because, you know, the ball in Japan is a lot tackier as you
presumably
out.
He's been using the ball for like bullpens and stuff. Like he's had time to use it. It's not enough time. Right. But, like, it's not the first time he's used it today. It's the first time he's been in a game with it, I think.
Yeah. First time he's been in a meaningful game with it. And, that could be part of it. It could be that he's amped up to be pitching, you know, in front of his home country. He made his Major League Baseball debut in front of his home country, which is not something a lot of people can say that they've done as far as people that aren't from America, that is, but there's multiple factors that should be looked at as playing into it, but it's just, I still don't think he's ready for that level. I mean, if you look at his pitch total, like roughly one third of his pitches were strikes. And that's not very good. that's not a good ratio of strikes and balls for your pitch count.
Yeah. I mean, this is, if there's any team that was already planning on using a million relievers this year to help their dudes, it's the Dodgers, but it's absolutely wild to me that, you have to hope it's just like Yamamoto had something like this, right? His first start last year was not great. It wasn't very long either. And then he ended up being okay, but it's rough. Right. And I'm hoping it's just the moment being so big. I do want to ask, Shohei Ohtani hit a home run, and I kind of want to put it, a lot of people are putting it in air quotes, because if you watch the replay, like they had to review this, and a lot of people on social media are saying that this was not actually a home run. I would love to show this to everybody watching, but we don't want a copyright claim on the channel. It looks like it's going to right center field, and it looks to me like a fan reaches over the wall and touches it.
100%.
They review it. They call it a home run. Should this have been a home run? Should this have been a ground rule double? What should have happened here? And was there any chance that a Shohei Ohtani fly ball in Tokyo would not be ruled a home run on replay?
Yeah, if they were going to a replay, it was going to be a home run whenever they started reviewing it. Because that's one part of this game that I did watch live. And you could tell live, I knew it wasn't a home run. I was like, why is he rounding the bases? Why are the outfielders just kind of standing around? Like, what is going on? And Kyle Tucker with a double there. But yeah, Shohei, it's Shohei in Tokyo. It was going to be ruled a home run. I don't think it should have been. But they might have had a riot on their hands if they didn't rule it a home run because of how invested everyone in Japan is in Shohei Ohtani and how much they love him. And the commentators pointed it out a little bit ago before we started recording that was the loudest the crowd has been in this entire series. And they've been loud. They've been loud the whole series, but was the loudest.
Japanese crowds are great.
Yeah, and that was the loudest was when Shohei, quote unquote, hit that home run. God, Justin Turner looks weird in a Cubs uniform. But it should have been a ground rule double, maybe at the least. I mean, because it was a double regardless, and at the very least, it should have been ruled a ground rule double because that fan 100% reached over the wall, and when you look at the replay, you can tell that ball is not going over the fence; it's going to hit the top of the wall, and so it is what it is. You can't really go back and change it. Shohei Ohtani has another home run on his record, but probably shouldn't be.
Yeah. I do want to point out, this is just kind of interesting that I noticed, and it's that the Dodgers are making a point to not use any of the bullpen arms that they used yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's been short starts for the start. Yamamoto goes 5, and they use Banda, Kasparius, Trinan, and then Tanner Scott gets the save yesterday in the 4-1 win. And then today, with the short, you know, the short outing by Roki, he's 3 innings. They use Garcia, they use Dreyer, they use Landon Knack. Kirby Yates gets the 8, and then Alex Vezia's in there for the 9th. Over under on number of different Dodgers pitchers who pick up a save this year, I'm going to give you a number of 7.5.
Ooh, 7.5. That's a big one. I
remember that any reliever who pitches the final 3 innings gets a save, even if it's a blowout.
That's true.
You pitch 3 innings at the end of the game, you get a save too. That's why I went with 7.5 versus like 6.5. Yeah,
that's true. I didn't factor that in. 7.5. I'm going to say, with that being factored in, I'm going to say over. I'm going to say it's right over. I'm going to say it's 8. I think that 7.5 is pretty spot on. So I'm going to say 8.
Yeah. It's kind of an embarrassment of riches, right? They've got so many dudes they can throw in the back end that like you feel good about. And that's what's wild. And it's, we've seen that in this series so far. I do want to, if people were curious, I feel like I undershot that number. They had 14 different guys pick up a save last year.
Wow.
Now, God. Yeah, 14 different guys pick up a save last year. So I'm probably way under on that number. It's probably like 12.5 or 11.5. Now, granted, it's a better bullpen. You add a lot of pieces to it, right?
Yeah.
But still, like it's funny. The two guys who have, or Taylor Scott, who picked up one yesterday, wasn't even on the roster last year. And it's just like, you know, it's nuts here. Anyway, any final thoughts on this Tokyo series? Like, the environment's been cool for me. I hate how early it is. We talked about that already. But the environment's been super cool. The Japanese fans are totally into it. On my bucket list is going to see baseball in Japan. I just think that would be absolutely awesome. I don't care who's playing. It would be hype. I've seen videos of like a random Tuesday afternoon game and the stadiums are full and packed and there's chants and it's just wild. So I just want to go see baseball in Japan, period. I don't care who it is.
Yeah. No, it's been crazy. The atmosphere has been fantastic. It certainly seems like a lot of fun. I mean, obviously selfishly, I wish it was not starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, but, It's been a lot of fun to watch. It's great that baseball is back in general, even though it is halfway across the world, and we still have to wait another, 8 days before the rest of the teams get started in games that matter. But it has been fun. It's been fun to watch, and the Dodgers come out of it 2-0. So, you know, it's weird. The baseball season is officially underway, and the Dodgers are on pace for 162-0.
Gross. All right, talking about 2-0, the Braves added two players in the last couple days. They added catcher James McCann on a minor league deal. He'll start in Gwinnett. He's expected to make $2 million salary when he makes the majors. Obviously prorated. If he's not there on opening day, he won't get the full $2 million, but that's his kind of thing there. And then yesterday, they added Craig Kimbrell on a deal. Again, he will start in AAA Gwinnett. He's expected to make $1 million in salary on the opening day roster. How any other former Braves in the league that they need to go pick back up just to bring back the glory days? Like, who are we thinking is still out there? Julio Teheran started like six consecutive opening day games for Atlanta. He pitched against them last year for the Mets. Like, he's still out there. What else do they need to do?
Yeah, I think Michael Soroka is another one. He's back in the division, but
he was asking for them to sign Michael Soroka as a reliever this year, and they didn't. But he's in the rotation for Washington and looked really rough in one of his most recent starts for them.
Yeah, no, for sure. But yeah, he'd be a good piece. I agree with you. He'd be a good piece for the bullpen, just from what he did with the White Sox last year in their bullpen.
White Sox, yeah.
It's crazy to see the Braves bringing back Craig Kimbrell. It feels like this may be Kimbrell's last season with this being a one-year deal back with the Atlanta Braves. It feels like he knows that he doesn't have it anymore at the level that he once did. And so this is going to be his swan song, and he's going to go out the way it started with the Atlanta Braves.
Brian McCann did that. Brian McCann came back. He got one final year in Atlanta, and then he retired. Kimbrell dropped below 95 mile an hour fastball for the first time last year, or 94, 95. I want to say he averaged like 93 and change over the course of the year. And it was even lower than that at some points in time in the season. And what people, and like, by the way, if you're a Braves fan and want to hear more about this, the first segment of Braves Today was on Wednesday was me talking all about Craig Kimbrell. So go check that out. But the thing to remember is he was like legitimately a useful pitcher in the first half of the year for the Orioles. His ERA finished at 5.33. And so a lot of people I was kind of chatting with about this last night, I was at a college baseball game in the press box, they were like, oh yeah, he just was like consistently bad all year. No, he was 6-2 with a 2.80 ERA in the first half, picked up 23 saves, 53 strikeouts in 35 innings. But the second half, he went 1-3 with a 10.59 ERA and 20 strikeouts to 15 walks in 17 innings. Like, first half dude is legitimately still rosterable and probably should have gotten more than $1 million in free agency. Second half dude is literally, you cannot have that guy on a roster. So we'll see which Craig Kimbrell he is. Maybe he makes it back to the majors. Maybe he doesn't. Is there any former Phillies you want them to go out and go grab just for the vibes and for old time's sake?
Scott Kingery just got designated for assignment. I've always been high on him.
I think the Angels DFA'd him.
Yep, the Angels DFA'd him. I think that the Phillies trying to force him into a super utility role is kind of what ruined him. And because when he was a prospect, man, he was fantastic. He was one of the highest prospects in the Philly system for quite some time and one of the most hyped prospects. And then whenever he came to the majors, that was in the Gabe Kapler era, and they tried to force Kingery into a super utility role instead of moving off of Cesar Hernandez at second base. And it didn't work out. And I think it killed Kingery's confidence. Plus working with some batting instructor outside of the organization. I think it's the same guy that helped Judge or whatever, nice. If I remember correctly, who is not very liked in baseball. But I would love to see Scott Kingery have another shot at it with the Phillies.
Here's what's wild. Looking at his minor league stuff, 2015 and 16, he plays nothing but second base. 2017, he gets like 18 innings at short and like 30 innings at third in the minors, and all the rest is second base. And then in 2018, when he's up, second, third, center, left, right, short, he pitches an inning in the third. And then 2019 is like that in overdrive. Six starts at second, 37 at third, 57 in center, three in left, two innings in right, 12 at short, 25 at second. And it's like, what are we doing here, man? Like, he had not done. And so when he's in the minors after that, he's playing a bunch of stuff, right? He was in Lehigh Valley and he played five innings in center field with a start. He, you know, third base, three games, all of that stuff. But like, he was consistently at second base. And then they just, when he debuted is when they're like, hey, we're going to make you play everywhere but that position that you played all in the minors. And I can see how, as a young player, especially one who, you know, like offensively was not bad. He hit .265 in the minors in his career. I can see how like including before he got called up in 2017, he debuted in 2018. In 2017, in double A, he hit .313 and in triple A, he hit .294. And from that point on in the minors, in 2021 in Lehigh Valley, he hit .181. In 2022, he hit .230. In 2023, he hit .244. Like, it just, to your point, it kind of destroyed him a little bit. And it's, I think sometimes as fans, and even apparently Gabe Kapler too, we forget about the mental load of baseball. We talk about it a lot with catchers, right? About how like young catchers, there's just so much to do at the major league level. I like the idea of being able to slot those guys in as like DHs sometimes and having a veteran back there with them to help them and all of that. Like, that's why I love the Angels grabbing Travis d'Arnaud to pair with Logan Ohapi, because Logan Ohapi is a young, promising catcher that was having to play 120 games a year. You can cut him down to maybe 100, let him DH some, and let Travis d'Arnaud help him with the other side of it, right? Scott Kingery obviously had a lot of the mental side of baseball to try to deal with, as far as, I mean, everything from I got to have five different gloves now to, you know, knowing at the time the defensive shifts and all the stuff he had to do at all these different positions and being not comfortable because he's playing a new position for maybe literally the first time in his career. And it's just, yeah, like I never really dug into the Scott Kingery situation until then, but that's interesting.
Yeah, and there was a lot of times where he would move to different positions in the middle of games. He'd play multiple positions in the same game, so he'd have to change gloves, and he'd have to, you know, go from having the mindset of a shortstop or a third baseman to having the mindset of a left fielder or a center fielder. And he did do well in center field defensively because he's got the speed for it, he's got the range for it, and he would have been a gold glove caliber second baseman if he would have been left at second base. But it's just they for some reason were dead set on Cesar Hernandez being the second baseman. And so he was the second baseman and Scott Kingery was supposed to be Ben Zobrist, and it didn't work out. And I like Gabe Kapler. I'm a lot higher on Gabe Kapler than most because, again, he's an analytical manager. I don't think he's worked out very well in the front office or the Marlins, but that may not all be on him, but I do like Gabe Kapler, and I kind of wish that the Phillies had him back now with the roster that they have now. But yeah, I do think that he has a lot to do with Scott Kingery not working out at the major league level.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. Okay. You sent me last week, you sent me a tweet from Codified Baseball that was talking about controversial baseball opinions that you think should be a thing, right? And like, this is your most controversial baseball opinion. Let's hear it. And so I said, hey, let's each go grab one or two and talk about it. There's one in here that I'm going to argue should not even be controversial. The runner on second in extra innings shouldn't start until the 12th inning. Play a couple innings of normal baseball. Because if you think, okay, Here's my thought process on that. Last year, for I think the first time, road teams had a better winning percentage in extra innings because they know that they have the lead and they can throw their closer in the bottom half of the inning. You have to choose if we put our closer in there in a tie game, like, can he keep a run off the board? And then we have a chance to win it in the bottom half. And it wasn't by much. It was like 48% home team or something like that. But for the first time, road teams had a better winning percentage in extra innings than home teams did. And that shouldn't be how it works.
Yeah, you know, this was something that came into play during the COVID shortened 2020 season, and they've just kind of left it. They haven't done anything to change it. And I agree. I think that it should start later in the extra innings. It is part of Manfred's trying to shorten the game, which I have no issues with the pitch clock. I did not think I would like it coming into it, but ever since it has started, I love the pitch clock. I do think it does make the game better as far as an action standpoint. But I with the ghost runner in extra innings, I do agree that it should start much later, like 12th inning, if not even later than that.
Yeah. All right. You want me to do mine or you want to do yours? The one that's actually interesting you want to talk about.
Yeah, you can do yours. I'm okay. Still trying to pay.
I literally never thought of this until he said this. The kid's name is Dylan. Quote, if you're on the field, so you're playing defense here, and you turn two with two outs, you should be able to choose between getting four outs when your team is up next, meaning the other team has to get four outs on defense for your inning to end, or only needing to get two outs when you are in the field next. I call it the carryover out. I am not saying yes or no on this. I literally had never thought of that until he said that. There's two outs. You turn two. Would you rather get an extra out on offense or have to get one less out the next time you're on defense? Obviously, I think that would be pretty rigid. If you are leading, you would take the defensive one. If you are trailing, you would take the offensive one. But I literally have never thought about that until now, and it's super interesting.
Yeah, that one was a fun one to think about. I think that would bring a lot more of the managerial chess back into the game. You know, with the shift gone and with the relievers having to face a minimum of three batters and things of that nature, that it would bring a lot more managerial chess back into the game. And I do think that was definitely an interesting one. And I like that one whenever I saw it.
Yeah. I'm like, huh, never thought about that until now. And I'm like, that's interesting. And it's fun to think about. It really is. I don't know if we should do it. There's obviously that is a significant change to the game. But that is super interesting. What was the one of the ones that stood out to you?
Yeah, I bookmarked a couple. So I'm looking through my bookmarks. There was one, the Mets have the stupidest fan base in the league and act like they're a dynasty, even though they haven't won anything since before the Berlin Wall fell.
Don't get fired. Don't get fired. Don't get fired. Don't get fired.
No, that I did bookmark that one as a joke. But the one that stood out to me seriously was stealing home counts as two runs. This one's from a guy named KG. I think that would increase a lot of the attempts of stealing home, for one, and make it a lot more exciting. Because, I mean, stealing home, it's hard to do. It's hard to steal home plate. And so there are guys that can do it. I mean, Bryce Harper did it in 2015 against the Phillies when in his MVP season, in the game where the Phillies walked him every time he came to the plate. I remember that game very fondly. It was not a fun time, but no, stealing home counting as two runs. I think that would be, again, it would increase the amount of times players try to steal home. And if they're successful, it gives them more of a boost than just stealing a regular base.
Do you have to delineate like a passed ball doesn't count or a wild pitch doesn't count? Like it has to be a legitimate attempt of home. You have to break for the plate before the ball gets past the catcher or something like that. Like, do you make a rule about it?
Yeah, and I think they have to lay that out.
And then you run into the issue of like, if it's a suicide squeeze, if the batter makes contact, then you don't get the second run because it wasn't technically a steal. But it is fun to think about. I don't think I'm in on that one. It is fun to think about. There was a really good one that I fully agree with. should not be controversial. It's from Pitch Profiler, who, by the way, has some great tools if you're into writing about baseball. I use a lot of his stuff, plus an arsenal interaction metrics and things like that. But Pitch Profiler said, and I agree, dropped third strikes are dumb. You swung at such a bad pitch, the catcher couldn't even handle it. The only place you should run is back to the dugout to hide from your embarrassment. I am 100% on board. The drop third strike is the dumbest rule in baseball. There is no reason why you should get, you got fooled so badly that you should get first base now.
Yeah, I saw that one and I liked it too. I didn't bookmark that one for some reason, but yeah, I agree. I think it's dumb.
919 people did like it. Yeah. It is a not a controversial opinion at all.
Right. And it's crazy because you, unless the ball like actually gets away from the catcher, like it gets between their legs or something, it is very rare that a batter is safe at first base whenever
they just throw it down and you're good. They take two steps in or out and then they throw to first base and you're out.
Yeah. So it's kind of a waste of time. It's more of a, it gives more of a chance for injury with guys sprinting at full speed because you know they're sprinting harder than they normally do because the ball's in the infield and essentially at an infielder already. And so it's, I agree. I think it's dumb. I think that should be done away with as well.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, a lot of these are dumb, right? Like a lot of these rules are just not really, or a lot of these people's responses are not good, but that was a fun one. And I just, I'm like, you know, he's right. Another one I thought was I thought was interesting was like not playing the game, but any jersey needs to have both name and number. No, like no blank nameplates. You got to have name and number on there. I'm like, okay, you know what? Sure. Okay. I guess it's not.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes it a lot easier for like casual fans to know who's doing what. If the camera's on a player, like the back of a player, and the commentary isn't specifically naming them at that time, it helps.
It helps open it for casual fans. Yeah,
yeah, and like for example, this situation kind of came up yesterday. I was playing MLB The Show on my shortstop, and I made a play. The catcher threw down to try to catch a base runner stealing second, and I was playing the Red Sox, and the guy stood up, and I was like, he was fast. Who is that? And I turned the camera around to look at the back of his jersey, and no name. and I'm so far in the career that it's probably a made up player anyway. But I was like, well, no name on the back of the jersey. That doesn't help me any.
Yeah. So. All right, let us know what you guys think. What is your controversial opinion about MLB? Try to make it something that's actually like, you know, not like, hey, somebody should sign Whit Merrifield. That's not controversial. That's just a thing that you want to happen. Give us something good here. I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. While you're on social, like while you're on the computer, though, firstpitchpodcast.com to get every episode of the show. Subscribe to us on YouTube and on audio. Send your friends. Leave a 5-star review. That'd be awesome. Until next time. This has been First Pitch.